What are you up to now, 2B?
Yeah, we're on base, I'm at base. Let's see if we could all find a place. You see that the lines get wide. Again, every Gemara is a little bit different. But at least in my case, the lines get wide. And you'll count down from the wide lines, approximately 10 lines. And you'll see the beginning of the line is Kidei Tuma. If you go counting up from the bottom of the page, it's probably about 15 lines. And what we're up to is Heishivu Chachamim L'Divrei Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. And what we're trying to figure out is why the Chachamim rejected Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, if you recall, had a different version or tradition of the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. And the difference would be in what case. We have two cases that we have to address. One is Kinui and the other is Stira. In one case, we're going to need two witnesses, and the other case, all we need is one witness or even the statement, the declaration of the husband. Now, if you take a look at our Mishnah assumes that even Rabbi Eliezer agrees in the case of Kinui that you need two witnesses. And when I say even he agrees, I mean to say he agrees with whom? Anybody remember the other name? Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer both agree that Kinui requires two witnesses. The machlokes is in the case of Stira, whereas Rabbi Yeshua requires two witnesses in the case of Stira. Rabbi Eliezer and Mishnah requires one witness in the case of Stira, and that's one tradition. Rabbi Yossi has a different tradition. According to his transmission of Rabbi Eliezer, in the case of Kinui, all you need is one witness. And in the case of Stira, even Rabbi Eliezer agrees to Rabbi Yeshua that you need two witnesses. The Chachamim reject Rabbi Yossi. Why do they reject Rabbi Yossi? If you take a look in the Gemara, Heishivu Chachamim, they responded, meaning we call it in Yiddish, they slugged him up, if you're familiar with that phrase, right? They argued against him, they counter-argued, L'divrei Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, ein l'davar sof. You're really exposing this woman or any married woman to the possibility of, with a snap of the fingers, making her into a sota. Mayninu, what does it mean? Why is Rabbi Yossi responsible for creating a situation in which it is a cinch for the husband, if he gets angry at his wife, to make her into a sota? So the Gemara answers the following. The Zimnin Delo Kani. Keep in mind that according to Rabbi Yossi, all you need for Kinui is one witness or the declaration of the husband himself. So maybe there was never a Kinui. So all we know, and the only evidence that comes into Beis Din, is about Stira. So we have two witnesses testifying about this woman, that she was alone with a certain man. We called him yesterday the milkman, right? And now the husband wants to mess her up, make her into a sota. All he has to do is declare that before that she went into this secluded room, he gave her Kinui. The Omar, Kani'i. Kani'i is the verb of Kinui, of the noun Kinui. And he's saying that I gave her a Kinui. So what's going to happen now? How does the man, according to Rabbi Yossi, have in his back pocket this simple ability to make his wife into a sota? She opened the door, and the milkman came in. And two people saw the milkman going in. That happens on a daily basis, does it not? All the husband has to do to make her into a sota is to come into Beis Din and claim that the day before he gave her kinui. And now she becomes a sota. So the Gemara is saying then that Ein L'davar Sof means that it's a very simple matter for him to make her into a sota, Zimnin Delo Istater. Oh, I'm sorry, just one second. So that's Ein L'davar Sof, the Zimnin Delo Kani, V'yomar Kani. and therefore she becomes a sota. Now the Gemara says the following. If the Rabbanon are objecting to Rabbi Yossi because ein l'davar sof, they didn't raise any objection to our Mishnah, the way our Mishnah presents the transmission of Rabbi Eliezer. It must be that in our Mishnah they were quiet, the Chachamim, they didn't raise this objection because yesh l'davar sof. Hola Mishnah Seinu, according to our Mishnah, yesh l'davar sof. He doesn't have the ability to easily make her into a sota. That doesn't make sense. Because Zimnin Delo Estater, according to Rabbi Eliezer and our Mishnah, all you need is his claim that she secluded herself. Maybe in fact he fabricated the story. She was not alone with anyone. The Omar Estater. And he's going to come into Bezdin. So again, he'll need two witnesses for the Kinui, according to Rabbi Eliezer and our Mishnah. But his word is good enough for Stira, to establish Stira. Now she has to drink for the main Merarim. He could just simply make up the whole story about Stira. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yosef, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Af L'divrei Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Ein L'davar Sof. What happens now is that we're adding one word to the transmission of this brisa. When the Chachamim objected to Rabbi Yossi, we have to add the word af. That even according to Rabbi Yossi, we still have a problem of ein l'davar sof, which means that it's so easy for the husband to make his wife into a sota. And why is that? Because according to Rabbi Yossi, he can claim kinui even when it's a bluff. It's a fabrication. He never gave her kinui. But the word af implies that this objection can be raised according to the original formulation of Rabbi Eliezer, that in our Mishnah. And even in Rabbi Yossi's frame of reference, we could still raise the same obligation. The Gemara is hinting at the fact that maybe Rabbi Yossi tried to one-up it on the Mishnah, and he tried to solve the objection of the Chachamim by saying that if we switch around Rabbi Eliezer and Kinui is the one where he's believed, then we don't have a problem of Ein L'davar Sof. So the Gemara points out that the Chachamim rejected Rabbi Yossi because even in the case of Rabbi Yossi it's Ein L'davar Sof. Why? Because since she secluded herself with one man, all he has to do now is come into the courts and claim that there was a Kinui. So the Gemara is not happy about this. The Gemara says, "Af, you want to add the word af l'divrei Rabbi Yossi ein l'davar sof? It shouldn't have said af l'divrei Rabbi Yossi. Lo mi boy, lo mi boy means it goes without saying. L'mishnah seinu. In other words, the objection of the Chachamim called ein l'davar sof lo mi boy. It goes without saying. I don't even have to tell you that in our Mishnah, certainly the Rabbanon know that there's a problem of Ein L'davar Sof. But we want to be machadish that even according to Rabbi Yossi, you haven't solved the problem of Ein L'davar Sof. Says the Gemara, Adarabba. The logic is just the reverse. L'mishnah Seinu, according to our Mishnah, Ikar, according to our Mishnah, that you don't require any testimony on her seclusion, on her astira, then you have a serious problem of sota. It's very easy for the father, for the husband to make her into a sota. Why? Because he doesn't have to prove in a bezdin that she went ahead and violated the kinui and she was secluded. So therefore, in the case of sota, according to Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah, we certainly have an Ein L'davar Sof. So why do you tell me that af? Why do you say that even according to Rabbi Yossi, there's a problem of Ein L'davar Sof? On the contrary, there's a problem of Ein L'davar Sof in our Mishnah. Eloi Itmar, we have to change again the text. Hachi Itmar, this is the way it has to say. Om Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yossi, Om Rabbi Yochanan, L'divrei Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, af l'mishnah seinu ein l'davar sof. Even in the case of our Mishnah, we have the problem of Ein L'Davar Sof. So Rabbosai, we're going to start today with Amar Rav Chanina. That's the new Gemara that we didn't learn yesterday. And let's just summarize the final conclusion of the sugya that we did yesterday. We have two versions of Rabbi Eliezer. And we have the objection of the Chachamim against Rabbi Eliezer. According to one version, that's the version in our Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer agrees that Kinui requires two Edim, but Stira, all you need is one Ed or his word. According to Rabbi Yossi's version of Rabbi Eliezer, in the case of Kinui, all we need is his word. In the case of Stira, Rabbi Eliezer agrees to Rabbi Yeshua, we need two witnesses. The Gemara establishes that Ein L'Davar Sof, that there's an objection of the Chachamim against Rabbi Eliezer called Ein L'Davar Sof, and that objection applies to both versions, either version of Rabbi Eliezer. In the case of Rabbi Yossi, we understand very well that it's a cinch for the husband to make her into a sota, because he doesn't have to prove the kinui. So he can always just snap his fingers and come into Beis Din, make up a story that there was kinui. In the case of Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah, he doesn't have to prove stira. So all he needs is to give a kinui, and then he could claim that she was alone and violated the kinui. In both cases, Ein L'Davar Sof. Okay.
So that has to be the rationale why there has to be at least an aid to give the woman a shot.
Correct. And matter of fact, the Rabbanon accepted the Shita of Yeshua. According to Rabbi Yeshua, you need two witnesses both for Kinui and for Stira. So he can't wake up one morning and in a fit of rage and decide to make his wife into a sota unless he pays off two witnesses to say Kinui and another two witnesses to say Stira. Again, we're going to have a whole sugya later on in sota where there could be the same pair of witnesses for both. I'm not getting into that. Okay. Now, we're going to learn a statement of Rabbi Chanina. And again, in my Gemara, this is 10 lines up from the bottom of the page. Rabbi Chanina comes from a place called Sura. Sura is one of the citadels of Torah learning back in Bavel. And he's going to claim that we have to be very, very careful today not to give a woman kinui. Kinui today, in our time, and again, this is even in the time of Rav Chanina, back in Bavel, because he's living after the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, and there's no possibility of giving his wife to drink from the Mei Merorim. Therefore, lo lema inish le'issesei, a man should not say to his wife, bizman hazeh, lo tistri, don't go into a private place, behadeh together with ploni, with such a person. So again, let's go through the words of the Gemara to make sure that we're all familiar with the Aramaic words here. Lo lema, don't say. Lema is miloshon lomar in Aramaic. The Aramaic here is very similar to the Hebrew. Inish, a person, a man. Le'issesei. Issesei means a wife. Bizman hazeh, now in time, meaning after the Churban Habayis. Lo tistere bahadi ploni. He should not warn her, which is called kinui, of secluding herself with such and such an individual. Why? Now, what's going to be here, according to Rav Chanina, is a particular care that we have to take in our time, after the Churban Habayis, according to Rav Yossi. So our job, my friends, is to figure out why the statement of Rav Chanina is addressing Rabbi Yossi. He says the following, Dilma, what does Dilma mean? Perhaps. Kaimalon, we paskin, ki Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. If we accept Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, then kinui does not require witnesses. And therefore, the Omar, he says, Rabbi Yossi, the kinui al piatzmo, his claim, the husband's claim, when he comes into Beis Din to testify that he gave her kinui, is reliable. who mistatra, and then, heaven forbid, she violated the kinui, and she found herself alone with this individual, who's again a suspected criminal. But v'leka ha'idna me sota l'mivdaka. Leka means we don't have. Ha'idna now a time. Me sota, the waters of the sota. This is what we call the me merarim, those bitter waters. L'mivdaka. Now l'mivdaka is really a Hebrew word, but it's being conjugated in Aramaic. So that the shoresh, the root of this word, is bedika. Bet, dalid, kuf, hey. What is bedika? Like, for example, what do we do the night before Pesach? A bedika, a search. We don't have a way of searching, meaning of investigating, whether or not she's guiltless. Because we don't have the mei merarim. Vika asar le iluye isura liola. The very moment that he warns his wife and tells her, don't be alone with so-and-so. And again, he's believed to say that he gave her that kinui. Then what's going to happen is, as a result, if she, heaven forbid, finds herself alone with that individual, and the husband had warned her not to be alone with him, guess what? Ka'asale iluye isure dilioma. Ka'asale means he has prohibited her, iluye upon himself, isur olam, a prohibition for all of eternity. Now, there are two implications to this Gemara. One is that at the time of the Beis Hamikdash, we didn't need this warning. We didn't have to be super careful about kinui. If a man sees his wife and she's not behaving properly, and he has reason to suspect that maybe she's doing things that she shouldn't be doing, let him give her kinui. She's a sota. The answer is, if she's guiltless, she'll be able to be checked by the waters and will prove that she's innocent. However, today, that we don't have the possibility of what? Of mei merarim, then ka'asale iluye isura d'liolam. Through the kini and the stira, he can never resume his marriage with her. He's just going to simply have to deliver her again. That's number one. Number two, we see that Rabbi Hanina is concerned about the shita of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. Why is he concerned about the shita of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda? Let's take the case of kinu. According to the Mishnah, how many witnesses do we need in order to establish kinu?
Two.
Who holds like that?
Everybody
holds like that. So whether you accept Rabbi Yoshua or you accept Rabbi Eliezer, in our Mishnah, kinui requires two witnesses. If that be the case, then we certainly expect the husband to be very careful about kinui. Why? Because he is making a formal statement, a declaration of kinui, in the presence of two witnesses. It's not that one day he wakes up and he decides that he's going to testify that he gave her kinui, which is something that's very easy for him to do, and it's very dangerous because if chas v'shalom she's secluded in our time, he can never resume the marriage relationship. But in the case of the chacham, of the Mishnah, both according to Rabbi Yeshua and even according to Rabbi Eliezer, kinui is a whole formal process. And a man would be very careful. He would only claim kinui when he declared his kinui in front of the two witnesses. And he would only do so when he had very ample justification to do so. Meaning that she was not behaving properly. Okay.
These were in happenstance. Adam, these were Adam who the husband brings into the picture specifically. Correct. And then gives the kinui.
So again, Rabbi say, if we had more time, which we don't have, I would discuss with you the difference between two types of testimony. There's something called Eidus L'Kiyum HaDavar, and there's something called Eidus L'Birur HaDavar. Eidus L'Birur HaDavar could mean that two people passed by, they saw through a window, and they could testify what they saw. Then there's something called Eidus L'Kiyum HaDavar. It's not enough that two, for example, if a man marries a woman and two people happen to go by and they see through the woman, through the window that he gave a kiddushin, that's not valid. He has to introduce these two Edom. He has to invite them. He has to designate them as his Edom because he's creating a new entity called marriage. And that's called Eidus L'Kiyum HaDavar. Kiyum HaDavar means to make this entity, this legal change. Kinui, according to our Mishnah, is Eidus L'Kiyum HaDavar. He has to invite two witnesses. He's creating a new halakhic entity called Kinui. He's generating a new prohibition on her that she's not allowed to seclude herself with such a man. For a person to go through that entire process of Eidus L'Kiyum HaDavar, he's got to be very serious about it. Now here I just want to mention in passing that this Gemara of Rabbi Chanina is very problematic. Why? Because Rabbi Chanina is standing on the shoulders of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Now we have a principle that in a machlokas between the many and the single, that's called Yochid V'Rabim. Who do we paskin like? We always paskin like the Rabim. In this case, since the Mishnah quotes both Rabbi Eliezer in that tradition and Rabbi Yoshua, they both maintain that Kinui requires two witnesses. Why is Rabbi Chanina saying that, well, in light of the version of Rabbi Yossi that Kinui only requires his testimony, we have a problem today? Who cares about Rabbi Yossi? I mean, again, we have to learn Rabbi Yossi, and we'll rack our brains to try to figure it out because it's Torah. But as far as normative halach, psak halach, we don't pass it like Rabbi Yossi. And furthermore, we have a principle in halacha that we always pass like a Mishnah against a Braisa. The opinion and the version of Rabbi Yossi doesn't even appear in our Mishnah. So clearly, we paskin like Rabbi Eliezer in our Mishnah, or maybe even Rabbi Yeshua in our Mishnah, but certainly Kinui requires two witnesses according to everybody in our Mishnah. And we're not going to accept the Braisa of Rabbi Yossi in favor of the Mishnah. Certainly we would give favor to the Mishnah over Rabbi Yossi. So again, I'm not going to try to answer this question. I just want you to know there's a tremendous amount of literature here on this Gemara amongst the Achronim as to why Rabbi Chanina is worried about Rabbi Yossi. I mean, we don't accept Rabbi Yossi and we don't paskin like Rabbi Yossi. Now the Gemara wants to know something else. This Gemara that we're about to start now is what I call an etymological Gemara. Very often the Gemara wants to know why the Torah uses a certain term which is atypical. And in this case, the Torah uses the word kinui. So the Gemara says, Omrei Shlokish. Does everybody have the place? We are now five lines above the end of the page. My Lashon Kinui. Why does the Torah use the word kinui? The classic Hebrew word in Lashon Kodesh for a warning is hasra. Hasra would have been more appropriate. Why do you use the word kinui? Right, and that's in the pasuk itself. So Reish Lakish has an insight into the meaning of the word kinui. And he says the following. Dover hamatil kina beino levena. Levena cherim, excuse me. What does this mean? The key word here in this phrase is kina. Let's underline that word. Kina means jealousy. Kina means anger. Now you might say that there's jealousy or anger between him and her, and kinui is going to exacerbate the situation. But that's not the language of Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish chooses to speak about kina, about this friction beina between her levena acherim from others. He's not talking about her husband. Now, what does Dover HaMatil mean? Latil means literally to place something. And when you do something that causes an impact, you say you place it. That's the way Lashon Kodesh works. So Dovar, this thing called Kinui, the word Kinui comes from the same root as Kina. And giving a woman a warning not to be alone with a certain man is a Dovar Amatil Kina Beino Leveina. Where do we find this word Kina? So Rashi and the other Mefarshim look through Tanakh and they find two examples. One is in Sefer Dvarim and it says there, Kinosi below Kel. They angered me by substituting me with a non-god, meaning an idol. Or in Mishle, Shlomo Mel says, Ki kina chamas gover. So we're talking about a certain kind of anger, and that anger is called jealousy. What is this jealous anger? So the Gemara says the following, and maybe this will give us a clue as to why Rabbi Hanina was worried about Rabbi Yossi. Alma, the Gemara says, we see. In other words, the word Alma is always used when we can derive a conclusion and we can analyze the underlying premise of a statement. That's Alma. Kasavar, Reish Lakish is of the opinion that Kinui Alpi Atzmo, that even though the husband did not declare his warning in the presence of any witnesses, all he needs is to testify himself, that's enough to create kinui. So my friends, who is he holding like? In our mission, does anybody say the kinui is al piatzmo?
No.
Nobody. So that Reish Lakish must be reflecting the Shita Rav Yossi. It's only Rav Yossi who holds a kinui is al piatzmo. According to Rav Yossi, who knows about the kinui? Well, she knows about the kinui. Does anybody else know about the kinui? Were there any other witnesses? Hello, anybody home? Knock, knock?
No.
Nobody knows about it. Kinui is something that he does in the privacy of his room, and he says to her, don't be alone with so-and-so. And then later on, he testifies in Beis Din that he gave her this kinui. Therefore, the Gemara says, Kuli Alma, the entire world, Lo Yadi, they don't know, Dekanile, that he warned her. Viamri, and all of a sudden, she's behaving very strangely. She's being very careful about who she hangs out with. She's no longer her old, friendly self. She has now become a kind of a Robinson Crusoe. She's kind of very secluded, very separate, very alone. Viamri, and people will say, my, what's going on here? De kama de kabodla, that she is now budla. Budla means to be separated. Like, for example, the Gemara says about chametz, that chametz is lo bedili mine. You're not separated from chametz on Pesach because the whole year round you're used to eating chametz. Bedile is an Aramaic word which means lahavdil, from the Hebrew Lashon Kodesh lahavdil, to separate. She is now budla. Budla means she is living aloof, separate from society. Why is she so aloof? My, why is this so? Why is she happening to kama in our kama means in our presence, meaning in our society, to kabbalah? She's separating herself from society. She's antisocial. They don't have any clue why she's behaving in that way. The asu, they will come lemevad kinabada. It will come to a situation where they get upset and they don't know why she's behaving in this way. And the reason she's behaving in this way is because she wants to avoid the company of others. Because maybe if she's in the company of other people, she might come to inadvertently seclude herself with that person, and she wants to avoid such a situation. So according to Reish Lakish, standing on the shoulders of Rav Yossi, that kinui is a private matter and nobody knows about the kinui. The word kinui, which means to create this kind of enmity or anger between people, is a result of the kinui of Rav Yossi, because the kinui of Rav Yossi is private There's no public nature to it. And all of a sudden, she becomes very careful about who she's with. She's always nervous because maybe that person will show up and she'll be secluded with him.
Then she won't be secluded. It sounds silly that there's one person out of the whole community that she can't be with, and she's not going to be with anybody in the community? And in fact, if the guy snuck in, then she's not alone with him.
Right.
Because there's other people. So why would she...
I think what you would say here, that she becomes kind of... what's that word in psychology?
On edge?
No. What's the word for somebody who suffers from phobias?
Bipolar.
No. Not that extreme. You know. What's the word I'm looking for? Help me out here, guys.
Neurotic.
Excellent. She becomes neurotic. She's always looking to the left, to the right. She doesn't want to become a sota. That's the last thing that she needs in her life. And she's always afraid. She becomes a little bit detached. And that's the way that Reish Lakish makes sense out of the word kinur. Again, if you come up with another explanation, which is Rav Yemar, maybe you'll like Rav Yemar better. Rav Yemar, Rav Shlema, Mishmei Dabaye Omar.
Aggravation.
Dovar matil kino beino uveino. The word kino, it comes from the word kino, which is some sort of a friction or an enmity, but it's not between her and the people, but rather it's between her and her own husband, because now the husband has told her that he is suspicious of her. Once she hears that she's suspicious, she won't be able to have that endearing, close love relationship with her husband. So both according to Reish Lakish and according to Rav Yemar, we have a kinui, which is Miloshen Kina, because it creates some sort of an anger or enmity between people. By the way, the name Shleme is either an Aramaic form of the name Shlomo or the name Shalom. Right? Those two names are quite common. But in Bavel, they formed it in a Babylonian way. You know, they gave it a little Aramaic twist. So Shalom or Shlomo became Shalome. The name Yemar is probably a derivation of a Hebrew name. Because almost all the names in Aramaic are derivations of the Hebrew names. And what is the Hebrew name from which the name Yemar evolves? Anybody know? For example, are you familiar with the name Shilat? In the Gemara, it's quite common, especially in the Yerushalmi, Omarav Shilat, Shin Yud Lamed Tov. So the commentaries say that Shilat is notrikun, meaning it's every letter starts a word. And the word is Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Sabit. I have a good friend, his name is Shilat. So every name has a certain meaning. I never understood what was the meaning of Yemar. In fact, I have a friend whose name is Yammer, and no doubt it comes from this Gemara, Yemar. In any event, the Gemara says the following, Alma, again Alma means we derive from this if we analyze the underlying premise here, Kasavar, that he's of the opinion, Kinui al Pishnayim Eidim, that he's not afraid, Rav Yemar, that the people will all of a sudden see that she's in a very strange way changing her behavior pattern. She becomes very edgy and neurotic, and she's all of a sudden, budle, she's separating herself from society. Why? Because kinui al pishnayim eidim, everybody knows about the kinui. Once you make a kinui in front of two witnesses, it becomes public knowledge. But kuli alma, the whole world, yadi, they know dekanile, that he gave her kinui. And therefore, according to Rav Yemar, that's not going to cause any sort of enmity, because they can justify, they understand exactly why she is behaving the way she behaves. Now here, Abosai, if you're interested, we would really have to learn a Gemara in Erchin. The Gemara speaks about Lashon Hara. The Gemara says that, according to one opinion, if you say something pejorative in front of, in the presence of three people, that's considered public knowledge. According to another opinion, if you say it in front of two people, then it's not public knowledge, but there's a very good chance that they will share that with others. In this case, I think everybody would agree that two people who are present makes it into public knowledge. And the reason for that is what I mentioned to you before, that the role of these two Edom is Edus L'Kiyum HaDavar. Edus L'Kiyum HaDavar means that you specify two witnesses in order to publicize it. So for example, I'll give you a very simple example. In the case of a get, why would it be absolutely critical that people know about the get? And therefore you need two witnesses to be there and designate them at the time of the get.
The get is destroyed afterwards.
Are there any Kohanim here? We don't have any Kohanim here. Oh, okay. So you're not going to get the answer. If you were a Kohen, you would know the answer. The reason why it's critical to publicize that a woman is divorced is so that a Kohen should marry her. The Gemara goes on to say that perhaps when you give a divorce, you should have more than two witnesses. Because again, we're not 100% sure that the two witnesses will publicize the get and the Kohen will find out about it. Maybe these two witnesses will take a long trip to China and they'll never get a chance to publicize that they saw the get. So according to one opinion, we want 10 people to be there present at the time of the get. Because anything that's said in front of 10 people is considered by definition public. So again, the real sugya to understand what is public and what is not is an erchin with regard to Lashon Hara. The ihu, who the asi lemevad kinabada. According to Rav Yemar, since we're talking about kinui al pishnei edim, there's no problem with regard to the public. They're not going to be slighted or insulted by her strange behavior, like we said before. But rather, ihu, he, the husband, asi lemevad kinabada. When he gives her this kinui, asi, he's coming lemeva to do something which will create kinabe hadov. Hadov means with her, in terms of the relationship between husband and wife. And now we turn to Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. So again, we had Reish Lakish and his understanding of the word kinui. We had Rav Yemar and his understanding. They both agree that the word kinui comes from the word kino, which means anger. And therefore the Gemara concludes here on the top of Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. Alma we see, Kasavri, both of them are of the opinion, Reish Lakish and Rav Yemar. That's the word Kasavri is in singular, Kasavri is in plural. The Asur Likanoso, that because this creates anger, one is not permitted, again under normal situations, there are always extreme situations where a kinui is advisable, but under normal situations, the Torah commands us, we want to do everything that we possibly can to engender love. And therefore, a husband should be very careful. He should not be flippant about giving kinui to his wife, because the kinui itself is going to cause some sort of friction and separation between him and his wife. That's not what we want in marriage. However, in a case where a person is aware of the fact that his wife is acting in a very strange way, she is hanging around where she shouldn't be, she's not modest, then he should actually be not only permitted, not only does he have license to give her kinui, but also he should be proactive, he should be obligated to warn his wife. And the reason for that is because if there's real serious room for suspicion, then he has to clarify that. And the way he has to clarify it is through the process of kinui and stira. Now this issue really touches on a machlokas shin bei sil bei shamai. On the what grounds does the Torah legitimate divorce? And according to Beis Hillel, once a person has reason to suspect his wife, just 1 second, did I get it right? According to Beit Shammai, a person should not wake up one day and decide he's going to divorce his wife. That's Beit Shammai Shita. The Torah gives you a mitzvah to divorce your wife only when it's absolutely necessary in a case where she had some sort of relationship or where there's very great room to suspect that she acted immodestly. That's Beit Shammai. Beis Hillel says that if she burnt the eggs or the chicken, then he can divorce her. If we take Beit Shammai's approach, again, we don't postulate like Beit Shammai, but when we take Beit Shammai's approach, we certainly can understand why it is that kinui becomes, instead of a violation, also lekanoso, it becomes something that we should recommend and advocate in favor of it in a case where a woman deserves that kind of suspicion. In other words, we want to avoid an animosity between a husband and a wife, and therefore kinui is miloshen kina, it's awesome. But in cases where there's objective, and again we have to understand what that means, there's objective reason or evidence to suspect her of immodesty, then on the contrary, that's when the Torah gave him not only the right to give kinui, but also the obligation. Now the Gemara presents another view against Reish Lakish and Rav Yemar. Uman diyoma mutar lekanoso lekanos. There is an opinion that says that a man can decide to give her kinui. He wakes up one morning and he says, "I don't like the way she's, you know, she's interacting with so and so," and he gets very suspicious. He's allowed to give her kinui. Now, we have, again, to face the original problem. What does the language kinui mean? Because according to Reish Lakish and Rav Yemar, they both agree that kinui means something that's prohibited because it creates animosity. But now we have a man who says that the Torah allows you to give kinui to your wife, and there's nothing prohibited about it. So ma'u lashon kinui, what is the meaning of the word kinui? It can't be miloshon kina, because kina is something that's prohibited, and we're going to point to the opinion that it's permissible. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok, ein kinui loshon hasra. Now this is something really new. We know that when the Torah wants to use the word a warning, it uses the word hasra. Now we're saying that kinui is a synonym of the word hasra. Ein kinui elo loshon hasra. He says it in the exclusion of the negative. Kinui is nothing but the language of hasra. For that he needs a proof text. V'cheinu omer, and so the verse states, and this is going to be his proof text, and this is coming from the parsha in Tanakh of Yoel, and there's an entire discussion here about Yoel and what his prophecy was all about. We'll see that in just a minute. But the key words that come out of the mouth of Yoel in his prophecy is Vayikanei Hashem liartzo. God gives a warning to his people who occupy Israel. So let me give you a little bit of background here to the story of Yoel. Yoel was the one who prophesied that terrible things are going to happen to Israel unless they do tshuva. In fact, Yoel predicts that they will be attacked by locusts, and those locusts, is called Arba, are more severe than even the Arba of Mitzrayim. And the Gemara in many places objects to this, because how do you work this out? We assume that the Makos that were brought in Mitzrayim were the most severe of any kind of any kind of natural phenomenon of disaster. And yet in Yoel it seems like the locusts were going to be absolutely terrible, horrendous. Nothing was ever like it. It was supernatural, and nothing will ever be like it. In any event, Yoel warns the people that they have to do tshuva. If they don't do tshuva, then God will drive them out of the land of Israel, And Yoel's goal and his responsibility as a Navi is to give them a warning. And he has to warn the people that if they don't do tshuva, God will destroy the land. Where does it say in the pasuk that he gave them a warning? Vayikane Hashem li'artzo. So the word vayikane means that he gave them a warning. Okay, now we learn a little bit of Agadita. Although the previous Gemara could also be called Agadita, but it's not Agadita in the classic sense. This Gemara that we're about to learn, based on a Braisa, is more of what we call classic Agadita. By the way, does Rabbi Meis teach Agadita or he skips it?
No.
He teaches it, okay. My Rebbe used to skip Agadita.
Why?
I don't know, I never asked him. I didn't have the chutzpah to ask him.
So why are you doing it then?
I'm filling in for Rabbi Meis. That's why I asked you, does Rabbi Meis teach Agadita? If you would have told me he doesn't teach Agadita, I would have skipped this Gemara.
The Agadita is supposed to be so deep that it seems like it's superficial, but in reality it has...
Right, but my Rebbe felt that we don't have the keys to understand Agadita. Somehow it was lost in transmission.
Okay.
So rather than give you a half-baked understanding of an Agadita, he would skip it. It could be he skipped Agadita for another reason. He was very pressured for time, and he wanted to learn the halacha. In any event, Tanya, Hoya Rabbi Meir Omer. This was apparently a common adage of Rabbi Meir. Adam over avera b'seiser, a person violates an avera in private. He thinks nobody's watching him. For example, a woman who, you know, exhibits some sort of loose behavior and she's alone with a man and it looks like she's beseser and nobody has to know about what she's doing in private. V'akadosh Baruch Hu machriz olav begolut. But even though this violation was not implemented in the public eye, nevertheless it will become public because God will declare it in public. And we're going to see this in the case of a sota. She was secluded with a man. Nobody has to know about it. But because there is some sort of testimony, again, when we say testimony, it all depends on the Mishnah versus Rabbi Yossi. According to Rabbi Yossi, in his version of Rabbi Eliezer, you would need two witnesses, but according to Rabbi Eliezer and Mishnah, all you need is one witness that she secluded herself, and even he is believed to say that she secluded himself, so it's not really public knowledge. And yet, at the end of the day, she's going to drink publicly mei merorim. In other words, the subject of this agadic statement of Rabbi Meir is what we call hashkachat pratit, meaning divine providence. God is involved in the activities, the behavior of man, and he intervenes. And what you and I think are private become public. Shenemar, where does he see this? The avar olav ruach kina, meaning that he has some sort of reason to suspect her. And as a result, he makes her into a sota. Again, according to Rav Yossi, all he has to do is say that he gave a kinui and she's a sota automatically. But even if you don't accept Rav Yossi and you accept the version of our Mishnah that you require two eidim for kinui, nevertheless, as a result of this act of kinui, she goes into seclusion with a person violating the kinui, and at the end she has to drink publicly the mei merorim. And here I want to tell you a famous story. Do you like stories from time to time? I don't know if Rabbi Meis ever tells a story.
Yeah, always.
He does?
Always.
Many times.
Why didn't you tell me that? I would have given you 2 hours worth of stories.
He just mentions numbers.
I have books numbers. Full of stories. I have joke books. I have you name it.
Oh, lovely. That's what we're on.
All right. So this is a story, but it's a serious story. It's not a joke. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the famous founder of the Muslim movement, was once a passenger in a carriage, in the Agola, and the carriage driver, it's called the Bala Agola, on his way on the road, he stops by a farm, not a farm, but some sort of field, and he wants to steal some of the chickens from the farm. So he tells Rav Yisrael, he doesn't know who he is, he says to him, do me a favor, stand in front of the carriage and let me know if anyone's watching me. You know the story.
Well, yeah,
so as soon as he goes towards the field, Rav Yisrael yells out in Yiddish, Mirzet, we see you. So the man immediately runs back to the carriage and he looks back and forth. And this happens three times in a row. So finally, the Balagola gets angry at Rav Yisrael. He says, what are you doing? He says, Mirzet means they see you from Shamayim. Yeah. Up in the heavens they're looking at you. That's what they say, the story about a, since we're telling stories, about a very rich man who had a brother never who was very poor. And when his brother came, the poor brother came begging for help. So the rich brother said, all right, I'll lend you some money, but you have to pay interest. So the brother, what?
I didn't think Jews were allowed to charge interest.
All right, they do a heter iska, whatever it is. Anyway, don't ask a cash on this story. So now...
That's why your Rebbe didn't teach your brother, because of these questions.
So the brother, the poor brother says, and how much interest are you going to charge? So he says, 9%.
Oh.
So the brother says, 9%. The going rate is 6%. Aren't you embarrassed? Our late father is looking down from heaven and he sees you charging your own brother 9%. He says to him, from heaven it really looks like a 6.
That's a good one.
Says the Gemara, V'eina vera el loshen hachraza. The Gemara now tells an insight, relates an insight in the name of Rabbi Meir, that Rabbi Meir reinterprets or redefines the dictionary definition of the word Avera. And he's going to tell you that whenever you see the word Avera, you know that it has some sort of public element to it. Even though, again, the Avera was committed in privacy, but God is going to make sure that it's public. How does he see this? From whence does he derive this conclusion? Shenemar, Vayitzav Moshe, Vayaviru Kol Bamachne. Okay, now we're talking about the episode in which the Jewish people brought forth their precious gold and silver for the sake of what? For building the Mishkan. And finally, Moshe said, we have enough. You know, this is the only fundraising where they got more than they needed. Halavai, it should happen here. I'm sure Rabbi Meir would be very, very happy about that. $750 per person.
Oh.
If you want to double it, I'm sure Rabbi Meir would be happy. $750 is not the maximum, it's the minimum.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So when Rabbi Meir comes back and each one of you signs a check for $750, make sure to tell him that Rabbi Berzon helped him in that fundraise. So I get a little credit here. So Moshe lets out a clarion call and he tells the people that they don't have to bring any more gifts for the building of the Mishkan. And what word does he use? Vayitzav Moshe, Vayaviru Kol Bamachna. That word Vayaviru, which literally translates as it was sounded, you know, the noise or the clarion call was sounded.
Proclamation.
Says Vayaviru, it comes from the word Avera. Do you see that?
Oh,
in other words, from a syntax perspective, in terms of Hebrew grammar, the word Vayaviru is the same as the word Avera. And what was Moshe's goal in this Kol Bamach? You know, when he got on the, you know, with the foghorns and he told the people. He wanted it to be public in nature. So whenever you see the word Vayaviru or Avera, it means it has a public nature to it. Well, why does an Avera have a public nature to it? And the answer is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make sure that it becomes public. And this is a very severe warning to anyone who is tempted to violate the Torah law and he thinks nobody's going to see it. For example, if in on Yom Kippur, or for that matter, in any long vidui, for those who recite vidui, the Sfaradim have a tendency of reciting vidui the whole year round. Some Ashkenazim are a little bit more careful. They don't want to say vidui on a regular basis. But anyway, whoever confesses his crime in vidui, it says, Al Chet Shech Atonel Venecha B'Seser. And then it says, Ubegolui. What does that mean? So some say it means begolui. If it's revealed, then it becomes chil Hashem. So you want to add another element to your avera. It's more destructive. It's got a chil Hashem aspect to it, because any avera that's public is chil Hashem. But others say that when we say begolui b'seser, what we're really saying is that every avera b'seser is really begolui. Why? Because God eventually sees to it, according to avera at least, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu machriz all of begoli. So that word begoli in Rabbi Meir is the same as the word goli in the Al-Chet. And let's just finish up with Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish Omer, Ein Adam Over Aver Elam Kei Nichnas Bo Ruach Shdus. This is one of the most famous Agaditas in all of Shas. Reish Lakish says that a Jew is good by nature. He's got the spark of goodness to him. So why does he sin? Why does he commit averes? And the answer is because a spirit of shtus, of insanity, takes over him. And he derives it from the parash of Sota. Shenemar ish ish ki tiste ishto. What does the word tiste mean? His wife committed adultery. Why does the Torah use the word tiste? The root of the word tiste is shtus. Mm-hmm. It means insanity. This is what the French, I don't know if you're familiar with this, the French have something called a crime of passion, means that somehow for one moment he became insane. So the case in France is where a man finds his wife living with another man, and he, the husband, takes the law into his own hands. I'm not going to tell you what he does. It's like Pinchas, you know. He becomes a canoy. So in French law, if he found his wife in such a compromising position, that's called a crime of passion. And it's a mitigating circumstance. Doesn't mean he's off the hook, but he's not going to be tried as a murderer. Uh-huh. Here too, every single avera, according to Reish Lakish, is a ruach shtus. So we'll end with Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, the great Rosh Hashiva of Mir, and he says the following. What is it that brings us to an avera? He gives a mashal. You have a pit, and it's very dangerous. If you fall into that pit, you're a goner. It's a very deep pit. How do they call it in England? A pit? Is that? Yeah. So, as long as you keep your distance from the pit, you're okay. But once you come too close to the pit, then even a regular velocity wind can blow you and you'll fall, lose your balance into the pit. He says that that's what Reish Lakish wants to tell us. Stay far away from avera, because if you're too curious and you come too close, then what could happen is that it's so alluring that once you're there, the ruach shtus is just that simple wind that pushes you over the ledge and you'll end up doing the avera. Stay far away. And that's what Sota is all about. The Torah says that a man can give kinui to his wife and tell her, don't be secluded with this man. If you'll be alone with this man, that's too close for comfort. You won't be able to avoid the temptation and the power of the Yitzhak. Okay, we'll stop here.
Sio Gokara. You build a fence.
Everyone should have a great day. And pray for my voice that I should find, because I really lost it.
Well, very good, Father.
The conscious hearing is public for Thursday. Is that the same? Is it the same time as this year?
The parashas shir on Thursday is at 10:40. And we are now at 10:33. So it should be good.
It's fine.
Yeah. And tomorrow we're going to be studying a book called Meshach Chachma.
Oh,
have you heard of it?
Very good.
We have it here in the library. It's written by Rabbi Simcha Mitvitz.
Very good.
Oh.